God made the world and all its wonders for man to explore. And there are countless wonders just outside your front door. Now join natural world photographer and journalist Roger W. Downs as he shares the stories of the people, places, music, and cuisines he has discovered as we explore with RWD.
2020 has certainly given us a lot to think about, including how different cultures seem to butt heads on a regular basis, and sometimes very violently. But there is hope, especially if you head out to Cherokee, North Carolina, where one man has taken two different cultures that should be grinding harshly together and learned how to live harmoniously with both of them and embedded music in it all. And that is the story I'm about to share with you of Matthew Tunai. But before we get to that story, I want to personally thank you again for listening to another episode of Explore with RWD. I'm your host, Roger W. Downs. And if this is your first time listening, thank you so much for taking a chance on us and hitting that play button. However you got here, I appreciate you. And if you like what you hear, please subscribe to this podcast so we can continue to bring you the stories about the people, places, and cultures that we discover. And that brings us around full circle to Matthew Tunai, who I discovered when I was searching for new locations in Cherokee, North Carolina to go photograph because it's such an amazing wilderness area. And that's when Matthew's story about becoming a nominee for Flutist of the Year with the Native American Music Awards came up in my search results. And so I instantly thought that would be a great story to share. So I reached out to him and he said, "Of course, I'd love to talk with you. Why don't you come on out to Cherokee, sit along the river with me, have a cup of coffee, and I'll share my story and also play my flute for you." And I was in. Little did I know how inspiring his story would be, not just for me, but for others who have already heard the interview I'm about to play for you next.
Don't go too far. Explore with RWD. We'll be right back.
Hey, RWD here with you, and I want to thank you for listening in with the Explore with RWD podcast, where we explore new areas, find out the history behind them, and also share the imagery. But that's a little hard when you're listening, right? So you can see a lot of the imagery that we capture while we're out exploring different areas, including videos as well, by following us on your favorite social media, which includes Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, and Instagram. Just find us at Explore with RWD. I think you'd be pleasantly surprised. Again, that's at Explore with RWD.
That wasn't too bad now, was it? Welcome back to Explore with RWD.
Welcome back in to Explore with RWD. And sitting here with me in Cherokee is Matthew Tunai, the Flutist of the Year with the Native American Music Awards. And you're born and raised right here in Cherokee, right?
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about how you got started, because I always love to hear the stories behind how someone became a musician. And sometimes it's, hey, my grandma sang to us at the piano, or I just loved choir in high school. But your story is really kind of unique, like you were just thrown into the mix.
Yeah, I was kind of thrown in. It was the summer of 2008. I was part of the cast of Unto These Hills, our outdoor drama here in Cherokee. And we was right towards the end of rehearsals going into our soft openings. And the director asked me if I had a flute, and I said I did. And I didn't play it much. It was just a shelf piece. And I pick it up every once in a while, but I told him that. And he said, "Well, can you play Wayfaring Stranger?" And I said, "Yeah, I guess I could." And he says, "That's great. You're going on tonight in the pre-show."
How many hours did you have?
I had about maybe 4 hours.
Had you ever played that piece of music before?
I've heard it before, but I've never performed it. I've never had to perform it on my own or anything like
right.
that. But I've heard it in recordings and at church and stuff. So.
Well, that must have been a little nerve-wracking, I'd imagine.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Did you call up your mom and be like, "Hey, yo," or anybody in your family and say a prayer for me?
I just went ahead and started practicing and tried to figure out the fingerings on the flute. Because, truth be told, the flute wasn't my favorite instrument. at all. I didn't like how people played it, especially in the native flute. Whenever you think of native flute, you think of these long, overdrawn, you know, tones and sounds, and it wasn't appealing to me. It didn't interest me. So once I started, you know, after the initial, you know, either fly or fall off the top of the tree, I started developing my own sound, my own, you know, type of way of playing.
Right.
And it's really generated a lot of positive feedback. A lot of folks enjoy it. They enjoy that sort of an upbeat kind of sound to it. Whereas the majority of the folks that play this instrument, it's really mellow and it just sort of just drags,
right,
if I'm being perfectly honest. But I'm not downing that type of thing.
Right.
That's how they learn and that's how they do it. But what frees me to do my style is we don't have particular songs or ceremonies or anything like that pertains to the flute.
Right.
We did have flutes here in our culture, but they just weren't prominent instruments when it came to, you know, ceremonies and things like that. So I felt a license there to be able to create my own sound and my own way of playing. But if you go out further west, they have specific songs for the flute. They have specific ceremonies that go with the flute. But I feel where I don't have that tie to that, I'm free to do whatever it is that, you know, comes upon me.
So it really is your own style then, but still ties back a little bit into your culture then.
Yeah.
Almost, if you will, like country music obviously has changed a lot over the last 20 years. So maybe you're kind of taking those steps in the same direction, make it more of a modern feel. Because I've listened to some of your stuff, I'm like, that is definitely, I mean, I can hear the cultural background, but it certainly has its own style, which drew me to it. And I thought, this is really unique.
Yeah, my culture has a lot to do with how I play. I'm also a storyteller as well. And being able to deliver the story verbally, you get the image already, but if you add the music to it after that, it sort of colors in the drawing that's
right,
already there. And that's one thing that I did with my album, Through Their Eyes. I wanted to have a narrative with each piece. And I had gotten other storytellers, I got some of my family and a couple of my friends to help out with those narratives, because I didn't want it to just be me telling all these narratives.
Right.
Because I was going to do all the music and stuff. I felt that each piece of music had to have a different voice to go with that
right,
narrative, or else it wouldn't have worked the way it did. Because I wanted it to be personal. I wanted it to be an we sort of narrative instead of they did or this is what happened.
Right.
And I feel like switching those pronouns in those narratives that came from these stories that are in our culture helps to connect the listener to what our culture is and was. And you get a sort of a more one-on-one personal, like what we're talking now.
Yeah.
As if I had done this and
right,
we did this, you know, sort of narrative.
So what made you want to start becoming a storyteller? I mean, was it because of your music that drew you into that, or were you always a storyteller and it just kind of combined together?
I like to say that I've always been a storyteller, but I just hadn't got paid.
Well, amen to that, Matthew. I think my grandfather, who always used to talk all the time, would agree with you too. So in some of the stories that you tell, like you talk about the different culture, different stories out of your culture, what's one of your favorites?
I like some of the supernatural stories that are in our culture, and some of the animal stories too.
Mm-hmm.
I know the biggest one, the most popular story out of the supernatural is one about a monster that used to live among us called Spearfinger.
Okay.
She was an entity that came from the lower world. In our culture, we believe in the upper, middle, and lower.
Mm-hmm.
And all the insects and snakes, things like that, are representatives of the lower world.
Okay.
And this creature that we call Spearfinger was part of that world. But she came through into our world, and when she did, she stayed. And what made her so dangerous and so scary was her drive. Her only reason for being here was human liver. That's
wow.
all she ate. She didn't eat anything else. It was human liver. And she had the ability to change her form. She was a shapeshifter. So she had a spear-like finger on her left hand, and in her right she held her heart in her palm. And her body was made out of stone. It was a stone inlay
mm-hmm.
underneath her skin. She could manipulate rocks. She could pick up a boulder like right over there with ease, like it was just a pebble, and cement it to another one. And she would do things like that. And children, of course, were the easier targets
right.
to fool. And it was easier on her because she was able to form into an elderly grandmother. It didn't take much for her to do that.
So she was wicked.
Yeah, she was very wicked. And she made her home in the Nantahala Forest. And she went from there over to Whiteside Mountain, into the lower part of Tennessee, and she just stuck around here. And she walked these mountains, just feasting on human liver.
I remember to watch out for if I remember hiking. I should wander into a woman who's holding her heart in her hand.
Oh, yeah.
If that happens, I'm going to immediately think of you. I'll run, and then I'm going to call you and say, I saw her.
Yeah, and it was hard to tell that she was there, because whenever she would pierce the victim, there's no scarring, there's no pain, there's no evidence that she was there until 4 days later. That person would get sick and they would die.
Oh. Well, maybe I wouldn't see her then.
Okay. That's how she was. She was, her characteristics were almost sort of snake-like. You got that deceptiveness of her changing of her form. You've got that stealth
mm-hmm.
that a snake would have. And
wow.
That's how she was.
That is a spooky story.
That's the most popular among the kids.
Right.
Especially if I go to the school and tell stories, that's the first one that they want to hear.
That's the first one they
yeah,
want to hear.
That's the first one they want to hear.
Well, I guess, you know, every culture is different, you know, because
yeah.
I'm Irish and we have the Banshee, and that always fascinated me as a kid, so
yeah.
I understand. But the Banshee would wail when somebody was going to die, and you would hope yeah. that it wasn't you, right?
Right.
So when it came down to the storytelling, you said you got your family involved.
Yeah. It was just for this project. My family, they sort of tend to themselves, you
mm-hmm.
know. They don't go out and perform or anything like that. But the performance part of it does come out of my family. My mom's dad, my grandpa, my maternal grandpa, was a Baptist preacher, but he also was in a singing group as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, music was sort of influenced there. My aunts and uncles used to have their own gospel choir that they would perform. On my dad's side, my grandpa would go to different powwows selling toy crafts for kids
right.
and stuff like that. And his part was more in the cultural part of our
mm-hmm.
people. So with that, it's just sort of tied in, and that's what I got.
So you said your grandfather was a Baptist preacher, right?
Yes.
So you have Christianity, and then your culture comes into play. So, and I've always wondered this, and I mean no disrespect, but how do you ever find that sometimes it clashes, those two belief systems?
Yeah, they do. They do clash. The morals, the principles, do not.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a balance to it. Of course, in Christianity, the Bible teaches us that we need to, we should deny ourselves and to follow Christ, pick our cross up daily. And I believe that, and I still, you know, I still practice my Christianity. And on the other hand too, my heritage is Cherokee.
Right.
So as long as I'm not putting my priorities on just Cherokee culture or Cherokee heritage, I'm able to share stories, I'm able to work my language, because also I just recently got called to preach as well, back in March when we locked down, actually.
Yeah.
when I answered my call. So I'm still learning, how to do that, how to evangelize, how to preach, and
right.
things like that. And but practicing both ways, because there is a religion that we have in Cherokee culture. I've practiced it and I understand it, but that's something that I have to give up in order to follow
Correct.
Christianity.
Right.
Does that bother me or does that hurt me? No.
Okay.
Because I understand what has to be given up. Sometimes we don't like to give up things that we've been doing for a while.
Right.
So, sometimes we don't like to sacrifice anything. But if your convictions are that strong, the sacrifice, although at the time you might feel down and out about it, and you do go through it anyway, it's going to pay off in the long run.
Correct.
And that's what I believe. And I love my culture. I love doing what I do, but I know that it doesn't bring me salvation. And that's one of the number one things. That's the main thing for me, is you can practice, you can acknowledge your heritage, you can do certain things in your heritage, but you shouldn't rely on those things to give you salvation. Those were man-made. And that's the main thing about religion anyways, because any man, any person in this world can have religion and can be this type of person. But if they don't have a one-on-one relationship with Christ, if they don't have salvation in it, and it's nothing. Really.
And I agree with you wholeheartedly. I believe that God brought me out of radio to where I am at today. And that's a long story, which I'll share with you some other time.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you that testimony where I really had goofed up my life for a really long time because I believed in God, just didn't exactly follow what he asked me to do.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until I said, I want your forgiveness, but I'm going to be your servant, didn't my life changed around. And I'll share that with you later. But let's talk a little bit about the music too. So you went from, okay, you better learn this in a couple hours, get out on that stage and rock it out, or you're never coming back. I don't know if it was like that or not, but I'm sure you probably felt the pressure. So what was the next couple steps then? Because apparently then you were like, I mean, did the performance go really well? And people were like, wow, Matthew, you were great. And did that encourage you to continue on? Or what took you to the next step? Because people will fill in for all sorts of things, but never really pursue it after that.
Yeah, well, the cast was very supportive. Everybody was real supportive of it. And the more I kept doing it on a nightly basis, the more comfortable and more confident I got with it.
Mm-hmm.
And it got to the point where I was buying a new flute each payday. And I would stop at the museum and they had the High Spirits, and which is a good flute for a beginner.
Right.
So I don't know how many High Spirit flutes I had gotten that summer. But my brother, he worked there at the drama with me too, and he would stop by the museum before our call time, and I'd get a flute, and he said, "You got a problem." I said, "Well, it beats doing drugs." It's a good problem to have.
That's true. If he's doing drugs.
Yeah, but after that, I started, there was other musicians too, so we started getting together and start playing together, and we had some pretty good things going throughout that summer and the following summers. That's one thing I like to do, is collaborate with different musicians. I'm sort of limited to what I can do on just one flute. because each flute is keyed differently. So there's A flute, G flute, and D and C and F sharp and E. And I'm limited to what I can do with it. So the flute goes on a pentatonic scale. So there's only five notes. So I can only go so far down and so far up. But that didn't keep us from doing some good things. And,
well, that's cool. You know. So now you've got nominated for the Native American Music Awards.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
A buddy of mine, a friend of mine from Western Carolina University, he is a professor up there. He was part of the electronic music department at Western, but he had heard me play flute for the 25th anniversary of Western. It was something like that for one of the commemorative buildings that they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And he heard me play flute at that celebration, and he asked if I was interested in collaborating or, you know, recording some tracks and stuff. And I said, yeah. And at that time, I was still a student there. So I met him about towards the end of December. We laid some tracks down. And from there, through that winter break, I started listening to that stuff. And that's when it sort of clicked with me. It's like, this ain't just music. This is a story. I started writing down the narratives and adding it to the music. And I sent it to him, and he looked at it and he said, this is great. And we decided to go ahead and make an album. And I got the provost at Western to be a voice for one of these narratives, which was fantastic. I didn't ever think she would do it. She did, and one of my fraternity brothers did one, and my family and a couple of my other friends got in on it as well. And it turned out better than what I expected. And Damon Sink is his name. He's the one that encouraged me after we got the album done. Is there any awards, you know, shows or anything that you want to put this in? And I looked it up, and there was the Nannies. Mm-hmm. And I looked up what all we had to do, and I filled all the paperwork out, and we cut it, and we sent it in. And that summer, we found out that I got nominated into the Flutist of the Year category. And from August till, I guess, about mid-October, they was doing voting. And during the Fall Festival that year, I promoted the heck out of it. Telling them folks to vote for me and all this. And there's one thing about Cherokee. They'll vote for you. But if you're the only person on the ballot that they know, you're the only person they're going to vote for. What we didn't know and what we didn't realize was that in the fine print down there is like, you have to vote for each category or your vote is null and void. So that's what prevented me from proceeding on. So that's why I just stopped at nominee.
Nominee's still good, though.
Yeah.
I'll take nominee. They're like, I know him, click, done.
Yeah.
On to the next thing.
What's going on?
Yeah, people want it simplistic. That's in all cultures, by the way.
Yeah.
But that's awesome. So congratulations on the nominee, though.
Yeah, thank you.
And I was looking things up about the Cherokee culture online, because it's always fascinated me. And I came across you, and I thought, wow, there's a guy who's been nominated for a music award. And I've chatted with, multiple CMA award winners and nominees for years, because I was in country radio for a long time. But I wanted to find out what it was like to actually talk with someone who came from, it was based on their culture, opposed to, hey, let's go out and make $1 million and go on tour everywhere. Not saying that you couldn't do that, but I think your heart is more about sharing your culture than it is about becoming a big multimillionaire living in a mansion on the hill.
Yeah, that's just how I was raised, I guess. I didn't grow up in any fancy place. The first place I remember growing up and living in was a trailer.
Mm-hmm.
And we lived in a trailer till I was about maybe six or seven. And then we actually moved into a house. And, you know, it's just a single story house with three bedrooms. And that was it. But it wasn't until I was about in high school that I started taking a more of an interest in my culture.
Right.
Especially in the language. My grandparents are fluent speakers.
Mm-hmm.
But my parents and my aunts and uncles on both sides of my family are not.
Okay.
Of course, that goes into the boarding school and
right.
How my granny was treated. And I asked her one time, and I asked her why she didn't teach my mom or any of the others. And she said it was because how she was treated at the boarding school. She would get in trouble. Other kids would tell on her and her sister. And she decided then and there that she wasn't going to teach her kids how to speak because she didn't want them to be treated badly for doing so.
Well, that breaks my heart because I think everybody should embrace their culture. And we should also take pride in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think others should then look into other people's cultures and go, wow, that's fascinating. So tell me more about that. And I think we'd have a much better world if we could just all be willing to say, instead of, well, you shouldn't talk like that, it should be more along the lines of, hey, tell me more about that. Because
mm-hmm.
Why wouldn't we want to share each other's cultures? Like, I'm Irish, right? So obviously, I like potatoes.
Me too, I like them fried.
Right, I like them fried, I like them all sorts of ways. I mean, I can tell you 1,001 ways to cook some potatoes now. But we should embrace each other's cultures and differences because you learn something different. And I love diversity, personally. And that's one reason I do this podcast, because I want to learn about different people's cultures, their history, different places, and just how our whole world works. And we should, I think, again, let me stress, embrace it opposed to downplay it or be horrible to somebody. So did you then decide that you wanted to learn it because of that story, or was it something you just wanted to embrace for yourself?
It was a little bit of both, because I'm still learning. I'm still trying to learn my language. I know I'll never reach fluency, but I can make sure that I can get as far as I can.
Right.
And my grandparents is one of the reasons for that. I was, out of the grandkids, I am the only one that is pursuing the language. And when my grandma was still alive, she passed away, I think, about around 13 or 14. I was the only one that could speak with her a little bit in the
right.
language. And it surprised my uncle. My uncle was sitting in the living room one afternoon, and I had to take my granny somewhere, and I went in, and I didn't say anything in English. I asked her if she was ready, and she said, yeah, I'm ready, let me go get my jacket. But we all did it in the language. And my uncle, he's just sitting there, and he's just looking at us. He said, you understand that? Yeah.
Well, we should all embrace it. Now, I'm Irish, so it's going to be English. There is Gaelic, and I don't know Gaelic too well. I know a few
right.
words in it, because my grandmother was right literally off the boat. Like, she came from Ireland. My grandfather lived here in America, went over and fought in a war, and met her and brought her over. And she had no tolerance for misbehavior, I'll tell you what. But it makes me sad to hear the people, again, just slam different cultures for whatever reasons.
Yeah.
And we shouldn't do that. And I guess every culture is, in one way or another, kind of guilty of doing that to the other, and we shouldn't.
Yeah. And that's... Right there, we go back into Christianity, because the majority of the boarding schools were ran by...
Right.
You know, these Christians who profess to be, you can profess all you want, but if it ain't changed in here, in your heart, then it don't amount to nothing. But that's a lot of reasons why people, native peoples, are hesitant and really despise Christian missionaries or anybody, mm-hmm. you know.
Well, they've done them wrong for centuries.
There's sort of a clash between traditionalists and, you know, those that follow Christianity. And it really shouldn't be that way, especially if you're a Christian. Because not only do we promote repentance to salvation, we preach the cross, and that in itself, you know, has rubs people the wrong way, because people don't want to give up their sin, but, you know, uh-huh. that's the way it is. But when you take something like that, when you take the Bible, when you're supposed to be about that, and you're using it for the wrong reasons, and this is in culture too.
Yeah.
If you take these things that are meant to be good and meant to help people, and you take them and use them for the wrong reasons, then you are going to have a bad outcome with that. These folks that were in these boarding schools, that were working these boarding schools, they had the slogan, "Kill the Indian, save the man." They wanted us to be, of course, Christianized. They wanted mm-hmm. us to be converted and colonized. But they didn't have the compassion, and they didn't walk the way they should have.
Well, I firmly believe that Jesus speaks Cherokee. He speaks Japanese. He speaks English.
Yeah.
He speaks all the languages. And you can, yes,
Lord,
you can.
For the Tower of Babel, we'll all be speaking.
Right. Right. Amen to that. If they hadn't built it, what were you thinking? But
I like going into that too, because I like seeing Christianity, and I like looking at my culture and seeing the ties into it.
Yeah.
Seeing certain things. And that was one of the things that I think about often, is before Christ came, Israel had to do blood sacrifices.
Mm-hmm.
They had to do that to cover, to assuage for their sins. Our ceremonies that we had, I believe there was a purpose in that as well.
Right.
Although there's not any type of blood sacrifice that I know of that we had to give. But the intent was still there. We believed in one creator. We believed in one God.
Right.
We didn't have a name for him. We just knew him as a creator.
Right.
And I believe we knew who God was, but we just didn't know who Christ was until the Europeans showed up.
Right.
They brought us Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that some of those folks that were coming in had the right intent in bringing us the gospel, showing us what we're lacking, showing us what else we needed. But others, they used it for their own maliciousness, their own...
Well, unfortunately, humans have used the gospel for their own devious campaigns and whatever they wanted to push onto another culture or to profit from.
Yeah.
And, you know, I tell people all the time, I said, look, when you get to heaven, God forgives, Jesus forgives, but don't think he ain't going to slap you up alongside your head when you get up to the gates. I tell people that all the time. I said, someday I'll get home and I'll hug my mother. I'll be glad to see her. Jesus is going to come out, hug me, and then he's going to back him and go, you know that one time? But I jest. But it is. And I think, unfortunately, religion would be great if you can take man out of it. Mm-hmm. And some of the reasons they've used it. And I'm glad to see now that people are now starting to see that and trying to focus more on, what did Jesus really want? What did God really want out of us? And that was to love one another and to be kind and understanding. And yes, you need to spread the gospel. I agree with that wholeheartedly. But you don't need to shove it down somebody's throat or completely eliminate their language, their culture,
yeah.
in that fashion. You can walk both like you do. You're a perfect example of that.
Yeah, and with that, you know, we walk in love, but we think of love as being accepting all the way around. We think love is, okay, well, you just do what you do. I love you for it, and that's it. if your parent, if your mom or dad did not give you a whooping every now and then, is that going to better you, or is that going to make you more into a spoiled child and make you a worse person when you grow up?
Well, I agree with that too, yes.
Chastisement, you know, we need that. We need correction. They didn't do it just to beat on us. Granted, I'm not saying all parents are have that intent, because some of them are abusive.
Right.
And I understand that, and that's, I can't fathom seeing a child just getting beat.
Right.
Be beat. But if the child is going in the wrong direction, I believe whooping them, not, and I mean, I don't mean like beating them up, but
yeah,
like busting their butt every once in a while helps them.
It
helped
does.
Me. That's what happened to me. I don't know how many times me and my dad visited the backside of the church.
After service, I'm telling. Yeah.
But you know, it taught me not to do those things. It taught me to that I can't do those things in this particular place.
Mm-hmm.
I can't continue on, or else I'm going to get it again.
Right.
And it taught me respect. It taught me to know the right times to be able to do certain things, to be able to say certain things. And that's part of love. And like the Bible says, the Bible is good for reproof, for education, for, you know, for those things. And if we read it, and we read it in context, It's going to show us whether we're doing good or
oh, yeah,
bad. That's our chastisement. And so we do the same thing. At least we should, if we profess to be Christian, we profess to be saved through the blood of Christ. If we love our neighbor, despite who they are, despite what their background is, and showing them their sin. And that's where they like to throw a lot of stuff back at you. As far as, well, Jesus was said, well, as compassionate, you're just being mean, you're just being bigoted, you're just being, you know, you're being hateful. But that's not the case. If you love somebody, if they're going off of a cliff, you might want to try and stop them.
Right.
You might want to say, hey, turn back around here, you're going to fall off. Or, and it's like, go back to the child too. The child, you see a child flipping, flopping around on a couch, you be careful, you're going to fall off.
Right.
And they don't listen, they keep doing it, and they fall off. Well, I told you.
Right.
But if we don't come at folks with love in that, and show them that they are sinners, that they need Christ, that they need salvation, then we're not really giving them a benefit. We're not giving them an ample opportunity to realize where they're at. It's not me. It's not up to me to force you,
right,
to say you need to do this. You need, you know,
right,
try and make you. That's not it. The Holy Spirit has to draw you into that.
Mm-hmm.
And by the, all I can do is either plant the seed or water it. I don't give no increase. God gives that increase. And in His time, will that begin to grow? Will that begin to bring up conviction, to bring up a realization and an understanding of where that person is? And a lot of people, they don't want to hear how bad they are. They don't want to hear how sinful they are. They want to hear how good they are. They want to hear their accolades. They want to have all these things saying, you're going to be all right, you're going to be okay. But in the end, that's not the case. And that's what Christianity is. That's what having a one-on-one relationship with Christ is to be able to deliver that gospel and tell them and show them in love, whether that has to be the blunt truth of it, that's love. Whether they like it or not, that's love.
Right.
And that's, it's not me taking you and having a baseball bat and saying this.
Right. You don't want to pound it into people, but you have to deliver the message.
Yeah.
And I've told a lot of my friends who, and look, I worked in radio for a long time, and I have friends who still live a very sinful lifestyle. I go, dude, that's going to blow up in your face. You need to go to church. You need to find Jesus, and this is why. And I go, and I tell them, I go, look at me. Look how happier I am now, you know, walking with God opposed to where I was at before. And you're so miserable now. Trust me, this is how it works. But that's all I can do. Now, I don't beat them up and go, you're a sinful SOB or anything like that, because that's not what Jesus would have done, I don't believe. I mean, I tell you what the sin is. That's my job. But I'm not here to judge you. I'm not casting stones. I'm just here to tell you that what you're doing, unfortunately, is a bad way to go.
Yeah, and that's one thing that they like to throw at you and say, well, judge not. You know? But they didn't read the rest of the text in that. All right? They stop at judge not lest you be judged. The rest of the text talks about being a hypocrite. You can't tell anybody, don't do this, and then you're turning around and doing
right
the same thing.
Yeah,
that's playing the hypocrite right there. And that's why Christ says, consider the beam that is in thine own eye before you take the
right
out of your brother's eye. You got to look at yourself first before you can point a finger, before you can help another person.
Right.
And a lot of us fall short on that. A lot of us, and I know there's a lot of folks who are Christians who have that mentality, like they're greater than everybody else, and really that they're in the wrong as well. But also, we are told that we have a spiritual judgment. We judge spiritually.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we need. We need to look at the heart rather than the outward appearance, rather than what is being, you know, what's done on the outside. But is everything clean on the inside?
Right.
That's a spiritual judgment. That's the judgment that we can cast. But we can't do that unless we got everything right with God. unless we know that we're able to. But in the end, we sort of back away from that when we realize, well, we can't really do that because I'm no better than you are.
Right.
I'm no better than that person. But the thing that makes us different is I'm saved. I'm able to deliver this gospel to you. I'm able to give you this good news. I'm able to give you a chance to avoid hell. I'm able to give you that opportunity to have what I have. Because there's a lot of people that live in fear, of course, with the COVID-19.
Mm-hmm.
You got a lot of people that have no hope, that are in this particular lifestyles, that are being raised in a life that they don't see no way out. You know, we see that with the drug addict, we see that with the alcoholic, we see that with kids who have to put up with abuse. We see that with the wife that has to put up with an abusive husband. We see that with the husband who, you know, who's lost everything. We see that all around, and a lot of people don't have no hope. But that's what we bring, is that hope. We bring them a chance. There is more. They might have lost everything, but there's more there. There's more to than just what they're seeing in front of them.
Amen to that. And I'm living proof of that. And I'll tell you my story here after we get done. But I want to thank you again. We've been chatting with Matthew Tunai, the Native American Music Awards nominated flutist of the year. And next time he gets nominated, make sure you vote for everybody.
Please.
Vote for everybody so it does get counted. But where can people find out more about you and your music and also your ministry?
Not really sure where my ministry is going right now.
Okay. Well, you sound like you are ready to go, sir. And I'm not making fun, but that's great news. I'm very excited for you.
Well, I've got a good pastor that's helping me along. And as far as my music, you can find that on CD Baby. You can find it on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Amazon too.
All right, and by the way, Tunai is spelled T-O-O-N-I.
Yes.
Just so you're not misspelling, like, where is this feller?
Yeah.
So please help support Matthew and also all other musicians who are up and coming who are struggling through the pandemic. I've got a lot of friends in Nashville who unfortunately gave up their dreams, you know, and sold off their equipment, or now working construction, or whatever, and they really had a shot at becoming something, but they just couldn't because the pandemic shut them down. So if there's somebody out there still making it, please support them by purchasing their music, share it with your friends, tell them where they can find it, and say, and if, especially if you love a song, especially now with up-and-coming musicians and people who are really just making their living off of what they used to do is go around and perform, but now they're not, share it with all your friends on Facebook, on Instagram, on whatever social media platform you're on, because the more you get out there for people, and you can be there, if you really love an artist, be their big promoter. That's what I would suggest. But again, sir, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Don't go too far. Explore with RWD. We'll be right back.
It seemed bleak for the colonists to be able to establish their own country during the American Revolutionary War. The British were winning until the British made a fatal mistake and threatened the wrong people. And Western North Carolinian historian Bill Carson from the Orchard at Alta Pass shares that story during episode 2 of Explore with RWD. Listen directly after this podcast.
Welcome back to Explore with RWD.
Now that you've heard his story and his mission, it is my unique pleasure to give you Native American Music Award nominee, Matthew Tunai. Cherokee, North Carolina on your list of places to visit on your next vacation and support the Cherokee culture, its music, and more importantly, its people. And for more information about Matthew Tunai, his music, and his calling to preach, just look in the description of this podcast. I have links there for you to click on. Or visit explorewithrwd.com and use the keyword Tunai, T-O-O-N-I. And again, thank you for listening in with the Explore with RWD podcast. I'm Roger W. Downs, your host. And look, if no one else has told you this yet today, I love you. And more importantly, I know the good Lord above loves you. He has promised you that even in these trying times. Count your blessings because life truly is good. So until next time, peace, love, and coon dogs, y'all.
Thank you for listening. Visit us online at explorewithrwd.com to discover more about Roger, his photography, podcast, and adventures. Or follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at explorewithrwd. Remember, we didn't inherit the earth from our parents. We borrow it from our children. May God bless you and yours. Now get outside and go explore. Explore with RWD is produced by Downs Media Incorporated. All rights reserved.